Time to dive back in with a little midterm report card on the legislative session. Joining us now from the Public Affairs Research Council, Dr. Stephen Procopio. Dr. Procopio, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Oh, great. Wonderful weather.
Yeah. This Saturday was ridiculous, man.
Wow.
That deluge Saturday, that wasn't rain. That was just pouring. That was just like being underneath a pitcher.
Yeah, no, it's pretty steamy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're left with the aftermath now. We are, a little more than midway through the legislative session. We've got one month to go in this fiscal session. What are your takeaways as of now?
I mean, we're mostly tracking the budget. That's complicated. So I think right now there's been a very interesting proposal from the House. It remains to be seen what will happen in the Senate. The Senate and the governor have showed a little resistance. They have a different plan. And so it's going to be interesting to see kind of what comes out of that.
How different can it be if it's going to make it through, through the process within the month?
It can be radically different. They can change it up, at the last day. Right now, it's really not that different in the sense they're both, I think they're both very prudent plans. I really like the concept of what the House is doing. They're taking, a lot of money and paying down our pension debt. We have a huge pension debdebt. And they're basically putting about $1 billion towards this debt, which is going to have reduced, future payments of $1.2 billion. So essentially generating $200 million in interest savings, which is a great idea. Some of the details get a little lost in exactly what's going to happen. But it does mean things like increased money for early childhood is not there. And I heard Libby talking. There's a whole lot of concerns about what happens. Also, there's no mandated teacher pay rate. Now, what the House says, look, we're going to create $200 million of savings. They can take that at the local districts and then they can use it for a teacher pay raise, or they can use it to build buildings or whatever they need to do at the local level. Some people are not particularly happy with that. So that's the House plan. The Senate plan is, hey, we want to spend it on one-time things. So we want to build roads and do deferred maintenance and a lot of other stuff, but we also want to give a teacher pay raise.
Right.
So the crux of it, the real core behind the disagreement, is there's an expenditure limit, and you need a two-thirds vote to raise or temporarily set aside the expenditure limit. And the House doesn't want to do that, and the Senate thinks it's okay because they're spending this on one-time-ish money. So that's really the sort of big fight that we're going to see. My prediction is you're going to see some sort of compromise where we spend a little bit of extra money on pension debt. But the Senate will mostly get their way, is my guess right
now. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Procopio from the Public Affairs Research Council about the ongoing legislative session. All right, Stephen, you mentioned there was no mandate for a teacher pay raise. In paying down the retirement plan, you free up money for local districts to do what they please with the money.
Right.
Can the state legislature mandate what they do with that money? Can they do that?
Well, yeah, they do it. They've done it repeatedly over the past couple of years. So what they'll do is they'll say, hey, look, in the MFP, the funding formula for K-12 education, they'll say everyone gets a $1,000 pay raise. And that's in the funding formula. That's how you have to spend the money. So that's what we've done the last several pay raises. This is more, we're not going to mandate that you pay it, but we're going to free up enough money that you might be able to give a $2,000 pay raise. Maybe it's a little less, or maybe you split the difference, or maybe you use that on facilities or counselors or new buses. It depends whatever the locals need.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Procopio about the budget primarily and the legislative session overall. Let's talk about that expenditure limit for just a minute.
Sure.
So does PAR have a take on whether or not they should jump over the top of the cap?
So generally, the expenditure limit was a PAR idea. If you go back, the idea behind it is you don't want to grow government just because you happen to have a surge of money. And so to break the cap, you need a two-thirds vote in both chambers.
Mm-hmm.
So in this particular instance, what we see are two sides. You have one side doesn't want to break the limit, and then you have the other side. They're only breaking the limit because of the surplus money and the excess that we have.
Mm-hmm.
They're not breaking the limit because they're increasing the regular growth of government, like salaries and things like that. So in that case, I think both sides have a pretty good argument, and we don't really take a side never break the limit. Generally, we're against breaking the limit, but in this case, the Senate does make a convincing point. This isn't what the expenditure limit was put in there to stop. It was put put in and to stop the general growth of government, not spending a bunch of money on deferred maintenance and things like that.
Okay, I got to ask, if we don't exceed the expenditure limit, what happens with the surplus money?
It just doesn't get spent. And then you, some of it goes to the rainy day fund, and then the rest of it just kind of sits there until you can spend it.
Okay.
So it eventually just kind of sits there drawing, you know, whatever percent interest. And then at some point, there'll be spending that will be allowed that will be under the, assuming that the economy continues to grow, that you could spend it in the future years. No one's quite 100% sure, though. I want to put that out there. It hasn't really happened all that often.
Two-thirds vote on either side. That's a pretty tall ask.
On both sides.
Yeah, on both sides. That's a pretty tall ask to get this done. What's your level of confidence that if they wanted to go this route, they could?
Well, so here's the actual calculus. On the Senate, they're there. On the House, there is a core group that probably right now has the vote to prevent a two-thirds vote. So, again, a little over a third of them. Now, at the end of the day, while a two-thirds is hard to reach, people do also want to spend money. So they have a budget they want to pass, and they have things they want to get done. So if it comes between, you know, doing nothing because you can't pass a budget because you can't have the expenditure limit, I think we might see some people swap their votes. My hope is that we can sort of have a compromise, and then you'll have the Senate will agree to additional payments on the pension debt, but you'll still be able to have a budget at the end of the day.
Well, we're talking with Dr. Stephen Procopio from the Public Affairs Research Council. Stephen, there is, we haven't used this term in it feels like forever, but I'm sure it hasn't been that long. There is the potential of a fiscal cliff just a couple of years from now. How does this play into the overall argument?
Yeah. So Parr's been using this term for a year or two now because we've seen that there is a cliff coming. It's about an $800 million revenue shortfall. When other revenue will go up, so in net, it's probably going to be about a $400 to $500 million shortfall, mm-hmm. Which is not as bad as we faced before. Our biggest problem is no one's doing anything about it. The House plan, because it will reduce future payments, could in fact affect this and could make the cliff better. It could reduce the cliff. And so that has it to lend to it. Now, that's only true if they don't spend the money in the meantime. So if they reduce spending, then it's great. If they just say, hey, look, now we have a whole bunch of money, so the next 2 years they spend it. So when we get to that third year when the cliff hits, then we haven't done anything. That's a little bit of my fear. So we have a cliff coming, and so far not much has been done to prepare for that in the future.
Okay, so following along with that and going along with the same timeline, we're supposed to have that 0.45 cent sales tax roll off.
Right.
Are we seeing an increasing likelihood that sales tax might stick around?
I see no indication of that. I mean, so from Parr's perspective, that's a fine solution. It's like, look, they get here, it's like, look, we need this. We need this for making our workforce and education better. Then that would be a solution. Hey, that's great. If they say, hey, look, we're just going to make $500 million worth of cuts, then that's a solution. But I think if they do that, they should start making those plans now, because instead of having to eat $500 million all at once, you know, it'd be better if they could at least carve off $100 million this year, $100 million next year. And so you only have a $300 million issue, which would be easier to swallow. And no one seems willing to do that. The House, with this pension payment, I think does that a little bit. And so at least we're seeing some traction. But at the end of the day, you know, setting aside money is tough. They want to be able, especially in the election year, go back and say what they've done. And the saying, hey, I went back and didn't spend money, even though that's probably good long term, is a tough sell.
Oh, yes, absolutely it is. It's much easier to say, here, look what I got you.
Right. So it's a little more tangible as opposed to the abstract concept of like, look, you've got the government in a better fiscal position, which is the same issue the House is having with paying down the pension debt. It is a great idea, and I love that they're trying, and I hope they're at least partially successful. It is a tougher sell as opposed to, well, look at all this sort of deferred maintenance on college campuses that we need to fix. And you do need to fix it as part of the issue. These are not made up issues. But do you put that off for another year and pay down pension debt, which long term will get you more money? Or do you go ahead and fix, some roofs that are leaking, which, you know, that needs to get fixed too.
Hey, look, Mother's Day is coming up Sunday. I'm not about to try and pitch to my wife how fiscally responsible I am.
I saved us some money on chocolate. Yeah, no, it's not.
Exactly. We've got about 2 minutes left with Dr. Stephen Procopio. Okay, stepping aside from the budget, there are other things going on. What has had PAR's eye?
So there's a couple of things that PAR's really looking at. I mean, there's a lot of motion on some tax issues, but I think a lot of motion. I don't know how much will come to that. There's a lot of sort of need for reform, and some of that has happened with the chairs of the Senate and House sort of tax committees. They are trying, but it's very tough. It's very complicated. I will put out a shout out for at least one bill that PAR is very interested in. There's a bill by Sharon Hewitt. It is basically taking what we had during COVID, where open meetings and where we actually basically all met via Zoom or, you know, meetings, and trying to put that in a process where citizens can make sure they watch the meetings, have access to the documents, have some method of commenting. So I think it's really trying to move us into the modern age, you know, post-COVID age on how we deal with public meetings. And I think it's the first step. I think we'll probably see multiple, tweaks to this bill if it does pass, and I hope it does, because this technology is going to change over time. So this is definitely a bill that is a very PAR bill.
Yeah, this is one. Treasurer Schroeder has been pushing for this for some time as well.
Well, he's done it. He's sort of one of the first leaders. He did this for the Bond Commission.
Yeah.
Been very successful. And the fact that this has been successful for him means that it could be a nice blueprint for future meetings. And we hope this first iteration by Senator Hewitt, it is sort of very conservative. It doesn't blow open everything. Some people really want a lot more. You have a lot of people that are participating on boards and commissions. They have to drive in from Shreveport and Ruston, and it's very difficult for them to participate. PAR's perspective has always been, that's not our main concern. Our main concern is citizens. So if you make it easier for just people to have electronic meetings, we got to make sure that citizens aren't locked out of them. And that's why we push for making sure the meeting is archived, making sure they could have some method of commenting, and making sure they can see the documents that are going. Because if you don't have the documents, you're just watching, you may have no idea what's going on.
Right. He is Dr. Stephen Procopio, the head of the Public Affairs Research Council. We'll be back in touch before the session is over with. I appreciate a couple minutes this morning.
Oh, absolutely. Always enjoy.
Yeah.